Chief Medical Officer for Radiology Partners. And Dr. Brenner, thank you so much for being with us. I know that these are trying times for anybody in the medical business.
Yeah, for sure. My pleasure.
Let's talk about as a radiologist by trade, obviously chest x-rays become so important here as a first line, and as anybody who's been in an emergency room knows, that is often the first test that you get, or certainly among the first tests that you get when you get in. People want to see, you know, what that looks like, because they want to make sure that you're breathing. That's the first most important thing, right? So as you're looking at this, are they able to get a sense before a COVID test come back? Because, you know, you could take a test, and then it could be, you know, more than a week before you can get a positive or negative. How much are the chest x-rays able to tell the medical staff when they're looking at them?
Well, the chest x-rays in COVID-19, the disease, are not all that sensitive. Anywhere from about 25% of the time to about 65% of the time. So if they're not really good as a first-line screening test to determine if someone has the disease or not. And a lot of people who are exposed to the disease and have the disease would be missed if we relied on chest x-rays as a first-line defense.
So that's not really helping the doctors make a determination. Is it just the rest of the symptom complex here that they look at, because they just have to make an informed decision and decide how they're going to treat, because there isn't really a specific treatment for this, so they're just going to treat all those patients no matter if they're presenting with the flu, which you can test for, versus COVID-19 pretty much the same way?
Yeah, so we found that imaging doesn't really impact the triage, or the first step that a doctor takes in deciding what to do, because if the test is negative, the chest x-ray, and even a CAT scan early in the disease has a relatively low sensitivity. And, you know, it can be less than 50% in the first couple of days. It gets higher by the fifth day, but it doesn't really impact the care specifically. What we have seen in Europe, and particularly in Italy and Spain, and in Asia, is that ultrasound, which is not a study that typically is associated with looking at the lungs, is really useful as a point of care procedure where a doctor can look at a patient and look at an ultrasound, do a quick bedside ultrasound in a fairly quick manner, and actually have more sensitivity to detection of the lung disease associated with COVID-19 than a portable chest x-ray. And then doesn't have the bend. Yeah, so it's really been shown in other countries to be quite effective.
I did notice in New York, the CNN was able to get their cameras into this one particularly southern New York hospital system, and they were able to go into the emergency rooms and some of the other triage areas, and I did notice them doing that. It looked like they were giving a sonogram or an echocardiogram or something to people, and I'm like, that is, and they were doing it on the side, you know, they're doing where the lungs would be, and I thought,
exactly.
I didn't understand what that was, and now you're explaining it. But here is the bigger, I think, question is, as the disease progresses, what are doctors looking for? What are the radiologists looking for? What are the people on the front line looking for to make a decision to send somebody into ICU or to send somebody onto a ventilator?
Okay. So basically what the coronavirus does to the lungs is, if you think of the lungs kind of as an upside-down tree, as the respiratory system is an upside-down tree, with the leaves being the air sacs, those air sacs get filled with fluid during the inflammatory response to the virus. So the respiratory cells, the cells that line the lung, are very sensitive to being attacked by the coronavirus. Their receptors are really have a strong affinity for them. And that brings in inflammatory cells, and that can prevent oxygenation, which is the transfer of oxygen from the air into the blood. And that's why people get short of breath. So people react differently to the amount of inflammatory reaction that they produce, and that's why in some cases people have fairly extensive amount of fluid accumulating in those air sacs, and that's what we're actually able to see on CAT scan, and when we can't see them on chest x-rays, and even what can be seen in ultrasound. It's that fluid in the lungs that is an inflammatory response, and there's variability in the way people respond with that inflammation. Some people have really strong responses, some people less so.
So at that point, how does the ventilator work? How are we saving lives with the ventilator?
The ventilators are actually maximizing the amount of air that can be transferred to the air sacs that aren't filled with fluid. So it can really maximize the efficiency and the ability to deliver the most amount of oxygen into the air. And what happens is when you get short of breath, and you get short of breath because you're not oxygenating well, it's a lot of work to do that, and you get tired. And the ventilator is able to actually continuously supply as much oxygen to your lungs as your lungs are able to absorb and do it effectively, and it doesn't tire. So it doesn't need the cooperation of the human, of the patient to actually participate in that process.
But, so doctor, people who are going on ventilators here are not necessarily conscious when it's going on, right? Because it would be very, very uncomfortable for somebody to be fully aware of what was going on if they were intubated and had a ventilator working.
Sure, yeah. That's correct.
And what we're hearing is that some of those medications that they use to put people into, you know, twilight are running in short supply. Are you hearing that also?
I have not, but I'm not an intensivist, so I'm not hearing
not
that
right
directly.
There. Yeah. Right. And so the idea of going on the ventilator and coming off the ventilator, we've just heard, as a matter of fact, just within the last hour, from the federal task force and also locally, we're hearing that the people on ventilators are coming off a little earlier in some cases than was expected, at least on average, and they're able to move. That was from the national numbers today. They were able to move people off the ventilators a little bit more quickly than they were thinking that they were going to be on. What would account for that?
Good responses to the body's reaction with the virus and the body being able to effectively fight the virus, then less inflammation, resolution of all that fluid being in the lung and allowing for better oxygenation and the ability for somebody to maintain breathing more normally, less work involved in performing that function.
Dr. Jay Bronner, Chief Medical Officer for Radiology Partners. I would like to get a sense from you, and I know that this is a tough question for doctors to answer, but in terms of the types of drugs that you're hearing about or you're reading about in the literature that are being tested as either treatments for this or potentially as vaccines for this, chemicals would be or molecules would be vaccines for this, what are you most hopeful about, just personally?
Well, I'm hopeful that we're gonna find antiviral. The most hopeful would be to find an effective vaccine, so that we'd be able to make sure that people who weren't exposed to the virus have a way of coming into society and being protected from developing the disease. But I'm also hoping that there are going to be effective antiviral treatments and to help people in the first week of the disease. And that would be things that would actually directly fight the virus in the early infective stage. And then I'm hopeful that anti-inflammatories will be able to work in the second or third week of the disease, where they could have an effect on the anti-inflammatory response that can overwhelm some people with, you know, the cytokine storm that brings a lot of people into needing a respirator. So I'm hopeful that those different channels will give us short-term and longer-term protection from COVID-19.
So this the drug that the malaria drug that people are talking about, the president is certainly talking a lot about, that particular drug works in malaria and other uses, on-label uses for that drug, is that it basically knocks down the immune system a little bit, so the immune system doesn't go super hot and start to create its own set of problems, which is, you know, which happens in viral outbreaks anyway. So does that, as some people are starting to take that prophylactically, that seems like a very bad idea, because if it knocks down your immune system, you might be more susceptible to it. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I'm not in favor of anyone just taking stuff prophylactically without without consulting with their physician, who knows their medical history, And I would definitely see risks associated with doing that. There are anecdotal stories where people who've taken the drug, that drug in particular, have had some response, but those are just anecdotal stories, and you don't really know on any individual what would happen had they taken it or not.
It seems to me as a layperson that one of the more important things that we can do right now, that we can develop, and it's within our reach, is this serum test to figure out if people actually have been exposed to the virus, have had the virus, and have the antibodies to the virus, because that's going to be critical in getting people back to work, and it's going to be critical in also understanding how widespread this possibly could have been with people who were not that were asymptomatic.
I couldn't agree with you more. That is a really important next step, particularly as we come out of this acute phase of the disease, and when we see that we're flattening the curve, so to speak, having the ability to understand who's been exposed and who hasn't will be critical information, and then we'll really understand how effective we've been in treating the disease.
In your opinion, doctor, how long do you think we're going to be battling this? Is this a year-long battle, years-long battle, or months, do you think?
Well, there are a lot smarter people than me who aren't sure of that. And I'm hopeful that we're going to see some really positive, good responses to the social distancing that we're all trying to do as effectively as we can in the next few months. But I think it's too early to know what it's going to look like in the fall or 6 to 9 months down the road.
All right,
but I do believe that the social distancing is a very effective tool in keeping us safe for now.
Jay Bronner, Chief Medical Officer for Radiology Partners. Thank you, Doctor. Appreciate your time
and
your expertise.
Thank you.